Welcome back to Bowl Droppings, everybody. We have another victory podcast coming at you today. Last 2 weeks, you'd think we'd be Charlie Sheen with all this winning going on. Sorry, I couldn't resist that one. But yeah, this was one of the biggest upsets of the year. We pulled it off, and I had the pleasure of being at the game day after Christmas against the Chargers. It was a result even I didn't really expect.
No, nobody did. Nobody.
One of those games where you could just tell the Texans wanted it more. I mean, just could see that they looked more motivated to play this game than the Chargers did. There were some other specific areas where I felt like the Texans did better. But we're just going to get into all of it right now. A lot of people are talking about Davis Mills, and I've been seeing some videos on YouTube anointing Mills as the future franchise quarterback. And while he played well and finally looked comfortable standing in the pocket, I'm going to give the old Lee Corso not so fast on this one.
I agree, and I'm sorry. How many times were people complaining where he goes, oh, what's so special about Davis Mills? He could barely throw over 100 yards a game. So we just went from he's not a good quarterback and what the hell are they spending that pick on to now, oh, he's the future. He's good to rebuild. I'm confident in him. Slow down. Do we also forget that this guy had all day because the line held up and this was with a team without Joey Bosa? Did we forget that?
That was going to be my next point.
Are we being that shallow-minded here, Texans fans? Slow down a little bit. I'm with you.
But, I mean, let's do give Mills a little bit of credit here. He showed that whenever he has a clean pocket that he can make some very pinpoint accurate throws. You remember that one throw where he threw it up to Philip Dorsett down the right sideline. It was over his shoulder where only his guy could get it. Yeah, it did involve a little bit of acrobatics on Dorsett's part, but it was still a good throw. It was in a place where defender couldn't make a play on it, and then later on you saw the touchdown to Connolly, much on a similar play design, deep to the right. But looking at both those plays, I do wonder how comfortable Mills would be throwing similar plays to his left. Eventually, defensive coordinators might pick up on that, and they're going to cover that deep pass to the right.
Just exactly when we have a lefty quarterback, right?
See if we can use more areas of the field.
Yeah, I kind of get that similar pattern, too. It's like, if you have a lefty quarterback, it's like, hey, don't worry about the right side of the field, cover more of the left, which is why people, no knock on Tua, is saying they don't like lefty quarterbacks. In words of Boomer Esiason, throw to port, might as well be short. So Davis Mills, I think you're spot on, has to work about throwing onto the left, but it was very comforting because regardless of injuries or COVID protocol, we wanted to see just something. It's just like, hey, can you give us a little bit of light? Can you give us something besides, you know, Brandon Cooks? And granted, right, if you go here, right, Chris Conley, 3 catches for 60 yards and a touch. Brevin Jordan sighting, a Philip Dorsett sighting. If you look at just the way that he just shoved the ball right up the Charger behind. Now, Rex Burkhead basically tore them up as well. Again, no Joey Bosa to help with that. I mean, the fact that this team got closer to 200 yards rushing than on a normal game where they're lucky if they get 50. Shocking. But then Davis Mills spread the balls out. No Brandon Cooks today. It was overall solid, and this was probably, you could almost say this is one of the upsets of the whole year for football.
Oh, yeah, I would agree. It certainly was. And, yeah, give a lot of credit to the offensive line for getting those running lanes opened up, allowing Rex Burkhead to go for 149 rushing yards.
You let him crap down your neck.
Yes, very much so. So, no, we were talking last week about potential draft choices in the first round this coming April, and we were very high on Evan Neal. And we have seen some of these top-tier prospect offensive linemen. Some of them do really well, and some of them don't. Now, Evan Neal was not a guy that I had on my radar. Granted, my radar for college scouting is not very big. But I just kept thinking of certain guys that I've seen come out, like Robert Gallery from, I think, 2004, guy out of Iowa, just never lived up to being the number two overall pick. So offensive linemen certainly aren't foolproof. I think we all remember Tony Mandarich was prospect taken very early by the Packers in the 90s, just epically flamed out. So no matter what regards people give to offensive linemen, it's still not a guarantee. And the performance that we saw from the line on Sunday makes me think that maybe pass rush is a more urgent need that we would look to address with our first round pick. Ultimately, it comes down to how do you feel like you could get a good player at those positions in the later rounds? And I don't really see a ton of top talent on the offensive line. Neal might be about it. You still got some other pass rushers that could be good, that could be there when the Texans pick first. And the depth in this class, well, could have a bit of a debate about that.
I agree because, I mean, from what I'm seeing, there's a lot of edge rushers in this class, but that's just like I mean, if the team somehow gets one more win, right, just remember that you're going to have the Jets and the Giants both having a pick in two top first-round picks in the top five. So, I mean, Evan Neal, depending on who's there, might get taken a little bit higher than maybe we think. Now, I'd want him to be a Texan personally, but, I mean – a lot of edge rushers here. There's one wide receiver in Garrett Wilson. But the rest, it's either edge rusher or offensive line. At least for those top. This is according to Pro Football Focus. It gets interesting, not going to lie. And it does get a little intimidating.
Yes. But now moving on to pass rush. I know we've talked about the fact that Mills had a clean pocket because the Chargers couldn't generate any pass rush, but neither could we. That was a glaring fault from this game if I was going to take one. Just nothing to be had on that front. So it makes me think this could be the most urgent need that we target in the first round. I don't think Kayvon Thibodeau will be on the board when we pick. I would be elated if we were to get him, but I don't think it's going to happen. Aiden Hutchinson, maybe. Although, I do, in what I have seen of Hutchinson, take this for what you will, somewhat of a grain of salt. He reminds me, he gives me Aaron Kampman vibes. You know Aaron Kampman, he played for the Packers in the 2000s. Yeah. He was a good player, mind you. Not knocking him. He was a very good player, but he didn't. He wasn't like that DeMarcus Ware or Von Miller, like generational type. Solid player, very good one, but is that a player that you want to be picking in the top five? Now, maybe I could be wrong. Of course, that's happened before. I've been wrong about guys before, but I would be a tad leery of Hutchinson, though. No disrespect to him. He's obviously had a great year, was a Heisman finalist, but I'm just a little leery of hitching my wagon to him, so to speak. Then you have George, I'm going to butcher his last name, think Castaferis from Purdue. Another top-tier rusher, probably be a top-10 pick. He might be another guy worth looking at.
Yes, now George K., I'll just refer to that. I think it's Kalafist, something. I'll just refer to George K. from Purdue. If we go by rankings here from this list, he would be available. So we still got the third overall pick going on. Then 4, 5, and 6 is Jets, Giants, and Jets again. I mean, I really think those two edge rushers are going to Jacksonville and Detroit. I just think that if you're Jacksonville and Detroit, offensively, the Jags are pretty well. It's just that I think that the coaching offensively and let's just be honest, I think the defense could be much better, and they need to get back to that Saxonville mentality they had a couple of years ago. So that's just my money on where it's going, because I think they need a lot, and you take the best player available. As far as Houston goes, this is where you can play it around. Now, we've mentioned before that some people think that's going Derek Stingley Jr. As far as overall grading, it's not as great as I would want it to be. Mm-hmm. If you want something going and you're trying to build around your quarterback as best as you can, it's clear that the offensive weapons are there. It showed you, because guess what? Regardless of Joey Bosa being there, they still got a good secondary that's, you know, quite the threat. And yeah. Davis Mills did a good job. So as far as the Texans' defensive backs, I think I'm okay, especially after they played last game. Justin Herbert is going to be a great quarterback through and through. Our secondary held up. I just don't see this team taking a corner in Stingley Jr. I think probably a top 5, top 15. I just don't think if he's generational enough to take at number 3 overall. So, again, it's down to what I think is going to be George K. from Purdue and Evan Neal. I think you got to go Evan Neal because you got to build around that offensive line. You could move Howard in the guard, maybe give Evan Neal. I think he's just an our generational type of player. I hope I'm right about this. It's just that if you look at the way that his size is, the way he moves, if it doesn't work out for him, you switch him to interior lineman, switch him to guard. And this is going to be an offensive line that will be consistent to help Davis Mills, because when he is rushed, when he has pressure, he does not look comfortable. And again, there's been too many games where he's thrown less than 150 yards. That needs to change. When you give him comfort, he's his best. Because he's not a scrambling quarterback. He's going to be one of those pocket passers. Give him the comfort he needs and everything else will follow. And the rushing game, it will follow up too. Because this rushing game outside of last week is terrible. It's ranked the worst in the NFL. You had the planets align and God shine down to say, you get one today. That's what happened. So you want to go in the right direction for your whole entire offense, I think it's Evan Neal. Or you got to pick the best offensive line that I think is available. I think it's Neal. If somebody says something else from the combine, I totally get it. But right now, I'm all in on Evan Neal. Your thoughts?
Okay. I've been wondering also about potentially a trade down. You have that number 3 pick. Well, let's say it's number 3. Obviously, you still have to finalize that. But
yes,
there could be some interest in that number 3 pick for one of these other top guys. Now, do you keep it to take Neal? Maybe. But, you know, with all the needs that we have and all the depth that we need to acquire, if we could trade number 3 and then potentially get, you know, maybe pick number 8 and another pick late in the first or another second or whatever package the table would say was adequate, I might consider doing it. Also, just know that we're going to have to need some playmakers on the outside as well. I mean, Nico Collins, we saw a little bit out of him on Sunday, but, you know, Chris Moore, Chris Connolly, those guys are just kind of bridge players. We're going to need some fresh blood in there to make some plays.
Agreed.
Looking at Chris Olave or one of these other receivers, it could be an option, also something to consider. Obviously, if Neal blows everyone away and looks like he's going to be what you're hoping he is, then maybe you stick to your guns and take him. But if he looks like a little bit of an uncertain bet, you know, trading down may not be the worst thing in the world. But obviously, we got a lot of time left before the draft. But it's always good to look ahead a little bit. Now, you talked earlier about the secondary, and obviously they had another good day. Now, Tevier Thomas got about – he won AFC Defensive Player of the Week this week. He got a pick six on Justin Herbert's second interception, and he came down into the box and made some good plays in the run game. So I was really impressed with him out there.
Yes, yes,
that day.
Yes.
You got him, you got Justin Reed. They all did their jobs that day. And Jonathan Owens, who actually was a practice squad guy at the start of the year, elevated to the active roster due to COVID. He made a good play on Justin Herbert's first interception. However, I kind of say that was a little 50-50. It was half good play by Owens and half bad decision by Herbert, because the window Herbert was thrown into was not very open, and he didn't get enough velocity on that ball, and Owens ran under it and intercepted it to prevent a Charger touchdown.
Yep.
And, of course, Simone Biles, who is Owens' girlfriend, was at the game Sunday, for whatever that's worth. Just interesting note throwing out there.
Also, a note to be made, because this is important. Fairbairn wasn't kicking.
No, he was not.
You got, what was his name? Eberle?
Yeah, Dominic Eberle.
Dominic Eberle, that's what it was. Think about it. 2 for 3 field goals, all 5 extra points made. With that, hey, if you decide to, you know, scratch the kick in, or if that's half of that, it's a closer game. That's a lot of points on the board if you think about it.
That's, yeah, certainly 11, was.
That's 11 points by a backup kicker, which, cut and dry, it's a lot to ask for. But one thing I got to notice too, and there's one thing that I'm kind of thinking about, and we got plenty of time to discuss about this in later episodes, but when I think of who would draft up from number 3, and I do think there's market, but the price is what? Especially if you're not going to take a quarterback that high. So my thought is, if you go by taking, I don't know, Matt Corral or Kenny Pickett, how high do you rank those guys? I just don't think they're top fives.
I don't know. Pickett might be, just because quarterbacks are in very high demand. Obviously, we saw Trey Lance get picked 3rd overall last year. Just, it's an inflated market, and you just need one team to believe in you, and there you go. They'll be coming up there to get you.
And also, as we record this, isn't he in a bowl game right now?
Yes, he is.
So, well, you never know.
Right.
I mean, heck, Jake Fromm was in the Sugar Bowl his last game for college, and he did good. Things happen.
Certainly.
Yeah, so did you want to go into next week?
Yeah, speaking of Trey Lance, let's talk about this Week 17 matchup in San Francisco. So Jimmy Garoppolo is going to be out, and we're going to see Trey Lance. And we haven't seen much of Trey Lance this year. I think he made a start against the Cardinals earlier this season, and it wasn't anything special. Of course, that was back whenever the Cardinals still had a defense that was worth reckoning with.
Before the Cardinals became frauds, yes.
Right. It looks like the Niners might have Elijah Mitchell back. So that's not a good thing.
No, it's not.
Right. So then you got Deebo Samuel, who's been having a breakout year. The dude is on fire. But actually, we should stop for a minute. Jimmy Garoppolo is listed as questionable, but after his thumb injury, I thought for sure he was going to be out.
I mean, if you go by the division, where do they stand as far as playoffs go?
Well, the Niners are kind of on the bubble trying to fight their way in, but
that's what I thought.
Right now, we say that he sat out practice on Thursday, according to the San Francisco Chronicle. So we'll just say that he might play.
So from what says here, the sixth playoff spot in the NFC is going to the 49ers. The seventh is to the Eagles. That's at the moment. So this game is important. But I actually think they could do it with either Lance or Jimmy G. And the key thing is, now, the one thing that stood out, maybe not in yardage, but Justin Jackson, the backup running back for the Chargers, did go 65 yards and 2 touchdowns on him. So between Ayuk and Deebo Samuel, and that's, you know, depending on how the secondary covers a unit with a really fast wide receivers. Like, this is a fast core, and then you have Kittle in the middle who you might think that, you know, it's like, oh, this guy didn't have a good game. It's like, yeah, but he's double covered, and Ayuk and Samuel put up 100 scrimmage yards apiece.
Right.
This is a true test for the defense, I think. As far as the offense goes, well, Davis Mills, you went against a good unit. Let's see if you can do it again. But as far as luck goes, well, not only are you not at the game, which makes a huge difference, of course. But realistically, just if you go by talent, I think the 49ers have more.
Right.
What's your take on this game?
Yeah, I think we're going to be hard-pressed to make it 3 in a row. While we didn't see Joey Bosa, we're probably going to see a lot of Nick Bosa. Yes, indeed. Because it looks like the younger Bosa's healthy this time around after missing all of last year. Well, most of last year. He has 15 sacks this year, by far leading the team. And our old friend Charles Minshew is now 49er. So, yeah, yep. There's a chance that Mills is going to be seeing some of his old teammate getting in there. And otherwise, this is a hard defense to go up against. They got playmakers at all levels with Fred Warner at linebacker, Jimmy Ward as a cornerback, Kawan Williams. You look at a team in the Niners that's going to be fighting for their playoff fortunes right now, and especially after the way they lost at Tennessee last week, they're going to be out with something to prove.
Absolutely. And they had a guy have chip on their shoulder. I think they
– Yes.
They have to – I mean, I think they got to win this. It's important. You got Kyle Shanahan, who's definitely got something to prove for himself and his guys. Jimmy G proven that he isn't some scrub if he does play. Trey Lance proven that he's not a bust. If he's the guy,
you look at it overall, Jimmy G's had a solid year. It's not eye-popping numbers. He has 19 touchdowns to 10 picks. He's got a 68% completion percentage. I mean, he's not an all-pro, but he is an efficient quarterback. You kind of know what you're going to get out of him.
Trent Dilfer's not handsome.
Dependent on him playing. Now, if Lance is starting, that obviously opens the door some for the Texans. I do think we're going to get a steady diet of Elijah Mitchell. once again, it just really comes down to the turnovers. And if the Texans can get a couple of them like we did last week against the Chargers, I think we can hang around. But I think the running lanes are not going to be open like they were against the Bolts, and it's going to put a lot more pressure on Mills, and I just am not convinced we're going to see that clean pocket like we did against the Chargers either.
Absolutely not. And even if Nick Bosa is out, they still have a decent pass rush that's going to, particularly for the interior linemen, make their heart race and give them a run for their money. Those linemen got it cut in for them. Tunsil, maybe not so much. Howard, we'll see if he could keep it consistent. But up the middle is going to be clogged like a toilet.
Yeah. I don't know why Nick Bosa would be out. I mean, I don't think he's been hurt all year. I mean, you never know. COVID is unpredictable. Anything can happen with that. That's what we've learned thus far. But, yeah, we will go on the assumption that those guys are all healthy. And, you know, if that changes, well, we'll have to cross that bridge when we get to it. But, yeah, you talked about clogging up those run lanes. Eric Armstead, another really good player on the interior that they've had for years.
That core is just – this offensive line is not built to handle that core. So if I'm Cully – if I'm Coach Colwing and I got to design a plan for Sunday at 4 o'clock, I am not running the ball up the middle. If he does, he's an absolute freaking idiot. And I would do quick pass. Otherwise, Davis Mills is either going to get eaten alive or he's going to make a bad decision and they're going to make him pay.
Yeah, I mean, trying to get horizontal might be somewhat of an option, but against this Niners defense, just it's always going to be tough sledding.
I think this is going to be – I know we've been saying it all year, especially against – we said it last week because we thought the Chargers talent-wise, like coach and everything, but – turns out they're kind of almost on the fraud bubble category. The 49ers, there's no way they lose this game. Because if you just look at the play schemes, if you look at the defense, this is exactly what you don't want to play against. The Texans just can't handle it. They exceed at running the football by running backs and wide receivers, regardless of who's hurt or who's not. You're going to have to figure out who to cover. It's going to be very difficult for the safeties and the corners. And this pass rush, still not there.
Right. I would agree with you on all counts there. So
if we got our best pass rusher and he's going against Trent Williams, give me Trent Williams. And if you go on the other side, you got two guys that'll double-team them. There's not enough good pass rush to have this 49ers team worry too much.
I would agree with that. Another thing I noticed on Sunday is my man Jacob Martin, who I've been really waiting to break out all this year, didn't really have an impact against the Chargers. And I remember Chris Smith got one of the sacks on Sunday. And I'm just thinking, man, who are these guys that are suddenly coming in here and making plays? Another small play that I distinctly remember was on the Chargers' first drive. They'd gotten deep into our territory, and on third down, Herbert tried to throw a pass over the middle, and Ross Blacklock got his hand up and knocked it down. And then he did the, you know, the wag his finger no, and I was just thinking, man, you're not J.J. Watt. Don't do that.
You know, Ross Blacklock, I'm sorry, but he has not done enough to put his finger up in the air and wave it back and forth. Forget J.J. Watt, forget anything. You have done absolutely nothing.
Well, I mean, he has improved somewhat. And I understand on the defensive line, you want a little bit of attitude, but at the same time, you don't want to just be like crass about it. You don't want to be like
that guy is just
too far into your own head.
Listen, he's improved. Don't get me wrong. But the thing is, J.J. Watt proved that he could do the TikTok or the no, 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 because he's got the talent and the numbers. Ross Blacklock doesn't clog the holes. I could give him a dozen rolls of toilet paper. He still can't clog up the holes. It's fact. The proof is in the pudding. Last year he was horrible and you thought that this guy was an absolute bust. Yeah, he's improved if you go by PFF score, but if you look at the numbers, they're just not there. They're invisible. I understand that pass rushers, I'll give you a prime example. Last week, Myles Garrett on the stat sheet only had one tackle.
Yes.
That's not impressive in any category, but if you look at what he does as a player, he's phenomenal. The problem is, though, is that Myles Garrett has consistently showed you time and time and time again with numbers and just with film. Numbers or film, Ross Blacklock, nothing. Zero Zippo donut.
And another thing about defensive linemen, though, is they don't need to put up a ton of numbers to really impact the game. I mean, if they're consuming blockers and allowing other guys to make plays, you know, that's still an effective use of a player like that. But yeah, let's not get there yet. Let's hope that Blacklock keeps improving in year three, and maybe we're going to see the potential that got him selected where he did. I mean, I hope the dude continues to get better, but don't act like a star quite yet. That's just all I'm saying on that matter. But anyways, let's get back and let's make our predictions for this coming week in the Bay Area. I think this game could be closer than people think it will be, but I don't anticipate a happy return to the Bay Area for Stanford grad Davis Mills. I'm going to say San Francisco wins this game 24-13.
I was going to go 31-13. I see four touchdowns and a field goal versus a touchdown and a pair of field goals.
I see.
Just because I think you might get lucky with maybe a little bit early, but prime time, unless it's, you know, garbage time, you might just let them go. I just don't see this team scoring a lot, and I just don't see the defense keeping up with whichever quarterback starts. I'm assuming Jimmy G is going to start, but the talent's there. If you have Trey Lance in there, 24-17. I still got them win no matter what, the 49ers.
Right.
And I think it's fair to say, just because, I mean, unless there's like maybe some gambling odd, I mean, I just don't see it being worth taking the Texans.
Right.
I mean, last minute COVID outbreak again or what?
I don't know. Anything could happen. If you have Lance in there, maybe it's 17-13 instead of 24-13. But yeah, I know we've been not very optimistic the past couple weeks, and this team has surprised us. But I think I'd be really surprised if we make it three in a row.
Well, hey, we may have been negative, but the upper management, the scoreboard, the talent, the statistics on paper, it says this is the way it is. But when they've won, we've given them credit. We give our flowers to the people that deserve it. And I think that's fair. I don't think it's like we're being miserable, Boston or New York fans. And you could argue Laker fans that are uneducated.
Right.
I think what we're doing is completely fine because we can hear our own words, and that's okay.
Well, there you have it, folks. So, we are just coming into the last couple weeks of the season. We've seen a glimmer of hope, but, you know, we're not anticipating a massive step forward. We're going to have to wait till the off season and then probably get some more overhaul before we take that next step. Any final thoughts for you, AJ?
Well, I hope that we keep this game within 10. Hopefully we keep it within 10 points. And I think that's a very optimistic way of going for it. And worst case scenario, you're going to seal a top 5 draft spot.
There you have it. Remember to check us out on Twitter at Texans Talk Pod, where we will show you all the stats that prove to you that Davis Mills is a great quarterback, despite everything we just said in this podcast.
And it's not my fault that he looks like Schnitzel from Chowder.
Yes.
Rada, rada, rada. I just see your facial reaction.
Yeah, it's mostly my fault for the Davis Mills facts. Maybe someday Davis Mills facts will be like Chuck Norris facts.
Listen, it's not our fault that genetics made him look like Littlefoot from the Land Before Time.
Let's just be real. He's a better version of Mike Glennon.
So far, so good. And it's funny because you have some people like, dude, Bart Scott went on the air. He was talking about the Cowboys win, and he just goes, hold on. They just won against Jeffrey the Giraffe from Toys R Us. Let's pump the brakes.
Wow. The only other thing it reminds me of is that movie poster for Tomb Raider with Alicia Vikander. The most recent Tomb Raider movie that came out that you probably didn't watch, and you probably don't need to because honestly it wasn't that great. It just, it made her have a really long neck, and I'm just like, so this is the constant meme now. We're just memeing everybody having long necks.
Oh boy.
Yes. Whenever this episode gets tweeted out, that's the image I'm gonna reply to you with.
I can't
wait. Okay, this. Or maybe it's like Quagmire. You know how he has a long but really skinny neck with his trapezoidal head.
All right.
Well, that was not something I ever expected to do on this show, but it just happened.
Hey, with all the Star Wars references we've said over the course of like the last 2 years or so, anything's fair game almost.
Precisely. So we'll go ahead and wrap this up before it gets too out of hand. So, like I said, remember to check us out on Twitter and everywhere else you get your podcasts. And on behalf of AJ Torres, I'm Josh McSwain. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next time.